August 22, 1986 dawned clear and still over Jackson Hole, promising fine weather for climbing in the Tetons. Jim Bridwell rolled groggily out of bed and put on a pot of coffee. Bridwell, the fabled admiral of Yosemite, the first man to climb El Capitan in a single day, the first to ascend the notorious east face of the Moose's Tooth in Alaska, a veteran of the planet's most horrific rock walls, was spending a relatively mundane summer working for the Exum Mountain Guide Service and School of American Mountaineering, instructing tourists in the rudiments of rock climbing. At 8:30 a.m., he called the Exum office and learned that a group of clients who were booked to depart with him that morning on a two-day guided ascent of the Grand Teton had canceled. It was unwelcome news, for Bridwell, perennially strapped for cash and hounded by creditors, could ill afford the loss of income. A minute later, however, the phone rang, and Bridwell's luck appeared to take a turn for the better. A guide was needed right away to teach an intermediate rock climbing class. Was he interested? Sure, Bridwell replied without hesitation. He gulped his coffee, grabbed his climbing gear, and hurried off to the Exum headquarters, a small cabin beside Jenny Lake. The class consisted of four men, all friends, the oldest of whom was an affable, heavy-set, 41-year-old attorney from Houston named Edward Carrington, who had played tight end for the Houston Oilers of the American Football League from 1967 to 1969. Bridwell made sure that each student had signed a standard acknowledgement of risk form and was outfitted with a helmet and climbing harness. Then they all caught a boat to the west shore of Jenny Lake, bound for some crags near Hidden Falls known as the Exum Practice Rocks. The four clients, perhaps slightly awed to find themselves under the tutelage of one of American mountaineering's most notorious and celebrated figures, bantered cheerfully about the climbing to come. Nobody had any reason to suspect that before the day was over, Edward Carrington would be dead from a bizarre accident, the precise cause of which remains murky to this day. Each year, according to the American Alpine Club, some 25 to 40 people are killed in climbing accidents in the United States, a fatality rate, according to actuarial experts, that makes climbing slightly less hazardous than operating a power mower. And for the most part, these tragedies have little impact beyond the self-contained miasma of grief that descends upon the family and friends of the deceased. Carrington's death, however, would figure prominently in the decision of Yvonne Chouinard, founder of this country's oldest and largest manufacturer of climbing hardware, to take down his shingle and quit the business. It would also send legal and financial shockwaves through the American mountaineering community for years to come. According to National Park Service documents, Jim Bridwell's class started off like any other. Bridwell was unavailable to comment for this article. The group spent a successful morning at the practice rocks, reviewing the fundamentals of tying in, belaying, and placing hardware for protection, and completed two short climbs along the way. After lunch, they roped together and, with Bridwell in the lead, embarked upon what was meant to be the culmination of Exum's intermediate climbing course, a three-pitch route called the Hole in the Wall, with a difficulty rating of 5.7. The first two pitches went smoothly enough, and by 2 p.m., all five men were crowded on a belay ledge in the eponymous hole, an alcove cut deep into the cliff's granite facade, which to a neophyte climber contemplating the crux moves above can feel both claustrophobic and exposed. Carrington, in fact, mentioned as much to his guide, confiding that the place scared him. Bridwell reassured his client, made sure everyone was anchored securely, and then edged out of the hole and worked his way up the final steep slab that led to the top of the route. Carrington was next on the rope. After cautioning his three buddies, "Check your gear," he started climbing, protected by a snug rope from above. Moving awkwardly off the ledge on the small handholds, Carrington managed to struggle only a short distance away from the hole before his companions heard him shout, "Hold me," and watched as he abruptly popped off the rock. Bridwell, alert to the possibility of such a slip, immediately cinched down the rope, arresting Carrington's fall after he'd dropped only a foot or two. Carrington retreated back to the security of the hole, composed himself, then gave it another try. Once again, he scrabbled clumsily away from the ledge, and once again, his arms gave out just a few feet from the hole. 40 feet above, Bridwell heard him cry, "Falling!" I felt a short jerk, the guide later told a Park Service investigator, and then nothing, as if Ed were back on the rock, but somehow different. I looked down and saw him falling. In horror and confusion, Bridwell watched him bounce down the rock face, somehow disconnected from the rope. For a moment after starting to fall, Carrington maintained an upright posture, and it was possible to pretend that nothing was really amiss, that something would arrest his slide, that everything would still turn out all right. But then he was flipped upside down by a sharp blow against the cliff and began to tumble like a rag doll, accelerating earthward amid a shower of stones knocked loose by his repeated collisions with the wall. It became apparent not only that Carrington was going to go all the way to the ground, but that he was hurtling directly toward an unsuspecting group of Exum students gathered around their instructor, Peter Lev, at the foot of the climb. Overcoming his shock, Bridwell managed to blurt out a warning to those below. Lev, part owner of the Exum school, shouted at his 4 students to scatter. "It was horrible," Lev recalls, still haunted by the memory. Carrington was a very large man. He weighed over 200 pounds. The earth actually shook when he hit. If I hadn't jumped out of the way at the last second, he would have nailed me. Carrington bounced once and came to rest in the lower branches of a tree after falling approximately 150 feet. Lev sent a student down to the Jenny Lake boat dock to summon help, then rushed to Carrington's side, where he was soon joined by a student trained as an emergency medical technician. Carrington, severely injured about the head, lacked any vital signs. One by one, Bridwell's clients rappelled down from their ledge in the hole. The first to reach the ground was the victim's brother-in-law, James McLaughlin, and Lev was forced to break the news to him. Ed Carrington, his neck apparently snapped by the fall, was dead.